Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for October 27th, 2011. Winnipeg musician Steve Bell recently joined the Canadian Food Grains Bank's Fast for Change campaign, celebrating World Food Day, which took place on Sunday, October 16th. In his blog, www.stevebell.com, Bell writes, "Mine will be a rather humble fast. I'm simply going to abstain from coffee for the next 6 weeks. During that time, I'll use the agony of my unrequited love of coffee, read headaches, to remind me to pray, stir compassion, and to commit to learn more about the complex of catastrophes and complicities that generate abundance for some and desperation for others." And in his most recent blog, Bell wrote this, "I don't spend much time thinking about my own human rights. They've hardly ever, if ever, been seriously transgressed. And I live in a nation when we think of our wealth, safety, and safety primarily as a result of personal industry, character, and for some, God's blessing. There are, in fact, many places where good people who work very hard regularly go without enough to eat. I've seen this with my own eyes in Bihar, India, amongst the low-caste folks who are not only deprived of their rights, but who often don't even believe they have rights to be deprived of. The challenge for us, who already have enough, is to look beyond ourselves to others' basic needs, which is what the human right to food is really about. It's about us as individuals or as nations looking beyond our borders and learning to take better care of each other." And Bell ends by challenging his readers to start simply, don't take on the world's problems, but start to practice an extended kinship with others who are not part of your immediate family, social status, or race. Fast and pray, fast and advocate, fast and give. Well, it may be too late to take part in this year's World Food Day events, but we can still follow Bell's lead and care for those in our world who don't have enough to eat. Check out www.fastforchange.ca for more information. And as Bell urges, start simply. So what are your thoughts? Do you want to add to this conversation? Drop me a line at robert@salonministries.ca and let's keep this conversation going. Keep listening, and I'll repeat the email address at the end of today's show. Title track from Steve Bell's newest CD, Kindness. Well, Tim Schmaltz has been sculpting for more than 3 decades, and this coming weekend he will exhibit his brother's Grimm works as part of Artworks, an annual gathering of arts and artists taking place this Saturday and Sunday at Binghamton's. With sculptures in churches across the country and around the world, Tim describes himself as being devoted to creating artwork that glorifies Christ. Good evening, Tim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Now, you've been sculpting since you were 18. How did you get started?
Well, actually, I started sculpting in high school at EDSS. What an amazing school that was. They were so encouraging. And that's when I really found a love of creating sculptures. And so much so that actually in high school, I won a national prize for one of my sculptures sponsored by the Canadian Tea Council. At that time, I knew that one of the greatest things one of the most exciting things I could possibly do with my life is do sculptures, because I just found it so intriguing.
Now, when you were getting started, starting in that, did you have any specific influences in sculptures that you looked up on?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that it's almost like my sculptural life reflected my personal life quite a bit. I was, at an early age, I was influenced in abstract artwork, Jackson Pollock, the abstract conceptual artwork. And after years of doing it, actually, well, 17, 18, 19, I just found it was absolutely empty. And at the age of 19, I believe I kind of went through a sculptural conversion where I started looking at more seriously what I was sculpting and what type of value it had. And then, basically, straightforward from that, I looked at the artwork that I really, really loved, and that was the Renaissance artwork, the artwork that was found in churches. And then so I just started creating Christian artwork, and the feeling I got from that was 10 times what I got from doing any other type of sculpture. That's why I think I went through a sculptural conversion, and then I realized that through creating a great Christian artwork, you really had to know what you were sculpting. The subject matter was the most important thing, and kind of the side effect was a great sculpture. So in that time, I basically went through a spiritual conversion myself then that transformed my life.
So it was the sculpting and the progression of how you were doing your sculpture that led to your faith rather than your faith informing your sculptures.
That I did during this time, or when I was around 18, I had a spiritual conversion that was a little bit separate to my sculptural conversion, but it all seemed to be woven in at the time. And I think that what the artwork really did, what my Christian sculpture at this later, I mean, at my late teens and early 20s really did, was it enforced it just really enforced and strengthened my beginning spiritual direction that I was pursuing. And I think it was because, you know, you're sitting, like this is what I describe, and I've said this 100 times. If you took, the Sistine Chapel, one of the greatest works of Western painting, Western artwork by Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel, and if you took the subject matter, instead of the creation of man, instead of these epic ideas, if you used the same skill but created a mural that was called Picnic in France, it just wouldn't have value. And so it's almost like in order to do a great piece of artwork, you need a great subject matter. And then basically you can use that example for your own life. In order to have a great life, you need to have that underlying idea behind it. You need to have that faith, a philosophy that's really powerful, I think. Do you kind of understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I guess when you're looking at it, one of the things on your website, you describe your sculptures as visual prayers, and it sounds like all of that is melding together, the spirituality, the faith, the sculpting, the artwork, and all of that. It sounds like it's all coming together into one entity for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I basically spend my days trying to find a great way of representing a very powerful subject. And it's almost like as long as I have the intent of making that perfect masterpiece of artwork that expresses an aspect of the Gospels that in a new light or from a different perspective, then I think I'm on the right path. However, it's very difficult when you're dealing with Christian subject matter, these ideas, these stories are 2,000 years old, and you can just imagine how many times they've been represented in artwork. So to bring a new light to it, or some new truth behind one of these eternal truths is a very challenging undertaking. And basically how I did, like, it's interesting because I thought last night of an analogy of if you have a beautiful gem and you hold it up and you look at it straight on, that's one thing. But if you start turning that gem so you can see the different reflections in the light, turning it this way and that way, looking at it from different angles, you'll really have a better understanding of that gem. You'd understand the beauty of it more than if you just looked at it from one angle. And I think with my Christian artwork, what I want to do is I want to take a story of the gospel and just slightly turn it a little bit so people can perceive it in a different way, so you can value that a little bit more. Just last week, I had an amazing experience because I found a new way of representing Christ washing Peter's feet. And I was just overjoyed the whole week when I came across this idea. And now I'm actually talking to some people about getting it to be a life-size bronze sculpture. But the idea is, I'll tell you about this because I'll kind of show you my process. Around 8 years ago, I did a sculpture of Christ washing Peter's feet, and it went to Las Vegas. Not at a hotel, but at a church in Las Vegas. And it was almost like a three-dimensional Renaissance painting. You had Peter looking, you know, with his beard, sitting on a little mound. You had Christ looking very much like he's usually depicted throughout the centuries. And something bothered me about that. For years it bothered me, and I just found the solution. I just found the answer of it last week. And the problem was there was too much food on the plate, so to speak. It was too much you were looking at something as a passive observer. You were looking at this amazing scene as a passive observer. And there wasn't any room for anyone else to really get involved in that sculpture. Last week I came up with the idea of actually creating a depiction of Jesus on his knees, beside a water basin, and beside a water container, and a seat, an empty seat. And Jesus, instead of his head down looking at the water basin, is holding a cloth in his hand, like a washcloth, and he's looking out at the viewer. And it's an invitation, it's a challenge. And it was just amazing coming up with this idea. After years of thinking about this aspect of the gospel and what it really meant. And I remember the day before, all day long, I was actually, it was going over in my head that this what does this mean? Why did Christ wash Peter's feet? And I almost after a whole day of doing that, at nighttime, bang, it came to me. Wow. And then I thought, this is going to be a wonderful new sculpture.
Well, that sounds very similar to the one that you've done, and one of the sculptures is outside a church in Ottawa. I think it's representing the least of the story about being the least of these, and as Jesus as a beggar. And again, it's one of these things where as you're walking by, you know, the comments have been, and people are just looking at it, thought it was another homeless person sitting on the steps. And it's as they come forward and as they go by the sculpture, it suddenly hits them that it's Christ. And he's sort of saying, if you wouldn't give to me, if you wouldn't give to somebody, then you wouldn't be giving to me. So it sounds like you're taking that a similar twist with the washing of the feet.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're talking about my sculpture, Whatsoever You Do.
That's it, yeah.
That piece is taking, sometimes I feel that what I have to do as a Christian sculptor is visually translate the Bible. The Bible has been translated in, you know, every single language you can possibly imagine. My purpose with Christian artwork is to visually translate it into forms, almost like not sound bites, but visual bites. And it's a hard thing to do. Well, it's not necessarily hard. It's kind of by chance. You can't just sit down and one day with some clay and decide you're going to create a piece that really moves people. What I've basically said is that I do not know when I can actually create something that would be really meaningful. But all I know is if I'm not creating, I'll never create something meaningful. So that's why my schedule of work over the last two decades has been obsessive. And because it's interesting, because you never know how something will come. I didn't know when I was driving back and forth to London that that night I would this idea of Peter would come into my head. And it's not like I can just sit there and I have tried this, and I can sit there and read a chapter of the Old Testament, do a sculptural idea or a drawing, and who knows what it will turn out to be, right? But it's almost like constantly thinking about the sculpture I do in a form of a prayer, in a form of a meditation, really helps actually come up with something that's great, right?
Yeah.
But you never know, and that's where I think you have this spiritual angle to it, whereas it's like St. Francis would say, an instrument of God's peace, right? And so I think that as long as I become an instrument that's working as opposed to not sculpting, I'm going to be having these ideas come to me, right? It's interesting because I'm working on several large public works right now, and actually what I'm looking at right now, which I was working on yesterday and this morning, is a sculpture of a surfer, Yancey. He was probably one of the most famous surfers that went from the West, who actually brought surfing culture from the West Coast to the East Coast. And he went through a Christian conversion. And what I'm doing is I'm actually sculpting something like a 14-foot, around 14-foot sculpture to honor him. And it's interesting because he became a Christian, and his idea, or one of the ideas he promoted was an inner light. And I was kind of part of his faith, that idea of an inner light. So within the sculpture, I'm actually working an actual functioning light in the base of it. I don't even know why I'm trying to describe it, because it's almost impossible to describe this sculpture, but it's really cool.
Right.
And but even something as simple as a public monument, this piece is going to a public beach in Florida. I'll try to put something, some amazing design worked within it. And so I always have to continue doing sculpture to keep my skills up and my mind kind of ready for if an idea like the one I just came up with last week with Christ washing feet would come. So I think you always have to be agile, so to speak. And that's part of what this show is about at Binghamman's. Every once in a while in my spare time, I will do some research on European history.
I need to take a quick break here, and I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about Binghamman's and the Brothers Grimm stuff. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue our conversation with sculptor Tim Schmaltz, talking about his participation in Artworks this coming weekend. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Lord of the starfields, Ancient of Days, Universe Maker, here's a song. Of the storm cloud, beginning and end, you make my heart beat like a banner in the wind.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to The Lord of the Starfields from Steve Bell's Symphony Session CD. Bell's going to be in Toronto in December for working with the Toronto Symphony Orchestra for a concert in support of Hope Exchange. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with sculptor Tim Schmaltz. Just before we're going to the break, you started talking about artworks and looking at some of the research you were doing, and you're exhibiting stuff from a collection on Brothers Grimm, and I had a chance to take a look at the artworks website, and and looked at some of these pieces, and it's really, really neat. Can you describe them and get into some of the detail you were starting to get into just before the break?
Absolutely. I'd like to compare myself to a professional tennis player that every once in a while will, on a Saturday night, have a game of ping pong. Well, this is my ping pong here, the Brothers Grimm show. This is work I've been doing over the last, 2 or 3 years, just one piece a week, usually on a weekend. I'll create a visual interpretation of one of these Brother Grimm stories that I find absolutely phenomenal. And one of the reasons why I was intrigued about doing this in my spare time was because I really have a strong a belief that our European culture has to be promoted. And one way that I can promote it is by actually taking these stories that are part of our culture, that have been part of our culture for since the Middle Ages, 600 years, and giving them life in sculpture and in a visual form. An interesting thing is you look at Snow White, which is a Brother Grimm story, and a lot of these very famous stories that are just part of our culture are from the Brother Grimm. And the interesting thing is, if people don't know about the Brothers Grimm, they didn't write these stories, they collected them. So in, I think, around the 1600s, 17, maybe the 1800s, I'm blurry on that, they went around Europe and collected all these stories that were hundreds of years old, and they actually documented them in their books. And I'm looking at a book right here, and there's hundreds and hundreds of these stories. Snow White would be a popular one. Rapunzel would be another popular one.
Hansel and Gretel.
These are stories that we all grew up with. And what I'm doing is I'm reading the original text that these brothers recorded when they went all over Northern Europe, and actually giving them form. And the interesting thing is, I first of all started wanting to represent them in stone sculptures and wood sculptures. And then I thought, this is too serious. A lot of these stories are very fun folk stories. So I thought, well, how could I represent these? And I thought, well, what's more folk art? Well, ceramics, vases, beer steins, water pitchers. I'm creating all of these pieces to work within some sort of functional piece of pottery. So it's really interesting, and it kind of gives me challenges, and it's like a little exercise. My exercise would be, I'm going to take Rapunzel and actually create a functioning beer stein out of it. So I'll be working with the clay, reading the story, visually changing it into a functioning piece of pottery. So it's a fun aspect of my creativity. It's almost like it's something a little bit lighthearted, but I think the works are pretty cool. I think some of the stories are absolutely amazing, and it really gives you an insight about how our Northern European ancestors lived. Just by almost every single story takes place in a forest. That's mm-hmm. because Northern Europe was filled with trees, and also it's not uncommon to have people starving in them, and so.
Well, and in fact, people, if they actually read the Brothers Grimm, the actual text that the brothers put together, and they were two brothers named Grimm, the stories are a little bit different, in some cases significantly different, than the Disney depictions that we've seen over the years, and there's a little bit of a darker element to some of those stories.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I'm going to be displaying is a project I've been working on is Snow White's Stepmother's Mirror. I actually created it. It's really cool with a mouth at the bottom, and the frame becomes a narration of the story, and then in the center is a mirror that's in the shape of a beautiful woman's profile. But even the stepmother, actually, historically, the stepmother was actually the mother, but they tried to soften it to make it a little bit distant, so it's a stepmother that's actually kill the Snow White. But it's interesting, it's fascinating. If I'd had more time, I would read more about the Northern European history, because I find that we have to kind of know where we came from, in a sense, and this is my little contribution, and it's something that's interesting too. And hopefully what it will do also is make people see these stories in a different light, or may perhaps make them see them for the first time. Some mm-hmm. of them are very, very obscure and weird. So, but my intention is over the next 10 years or so to have one ceramic work representing each story that the Grimm brothers created. And I just have this book here, and it's hundreds, right?
Yeah.
It's like quite a bit. And it's to do as much justice to each story as possible. So I'm going to be that's the number one thing that's going to be at this exhibition. Another thing that I'm working on that I'll have a couple pieces in. Can you hear me still?
Yep.
Yeah, there's like, okay, I'm just looking at this Brother Grimm. There's like, my complete Brothers Grimm has 256 published tales, and then several, oh yeah, around 300 stories, right?
Well, just looking at our time, we got to quickly wrap things up. Artworks, can you give us some details on what Artworks is? It's taking place, was it Saturday, Sunday at Bingham's?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday at Bingham's, 10 to 5. And so it's not only me, I have an area for this exhibition, but all surrounding this exhibition will be artists, painters, people that use their hands today to actually make things, which is kind of refreshing to see, considering most of our stuff is done overseas. So you can actually meet the people that make things, and you can certainly meet me, then I can describe some of these little works of art that I've been working on over the last several years.
And where can people find more information about you and your stuff?
Just Google me, Tim Schmaltz. You can see, unfortunately, I don't have this stuff, like the sketch that I was talking on the website yet,
yep.
but I'm planning on posting it. But just Google my name, and you can see tons of my Christian stuff as well as the Brothers Grimm. It's not hard. It's just Tim, T-I-M, and Schmaltz, S-C-H-M-A-L-Z, and then just Google images, and you'll find a lot to look at there.
Great. Tim, thanks a lot for your time tonight.
Thank you very much. Take care.
And be sure to tune in. Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thank you to my guest, Tim Schmaltz. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries.ca, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter @selaw13, S-E-L-A-W 13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.